a story that made it impossible to read this global movement back inside a narrow, like,
Jill Freeberg, you've got the last 20 seconds.
Well, one of the great things that came out of the Independent Media Center was 400 hours of video, an archive that we have just reopened since Rick and I finished the film and are digitizing for preservation. And this weekend, David Solnit's coming up. We're going to be projecting footage from that archive onto the Washington State Convention Center. There's going to be all-day events reflecting on what happened and what we can do with those lessons today. Parties. Who knows what will happen with the projections? It could turn into a street party, but there's going to be a bunch of opportunities this weekend here in Seattle, but around the world as well at other events to really take the lessons from what happened.
We want to thank you so much all for being with us. Jill Freeberg, Rick Rowley, Renee Feltz, and Tish Stringer from Houston to Seattle. Here in New York, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. That was Democracy Now! The time is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is going to be your evening news. But first, KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Levin & Levine, LLP, attorneys specializing in personal injury law. Levin & Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-946-8708 and online at levinandlevine.com.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Multnomah County District Attorney Candidate Forum on Sunday, December 1st, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Midland Branch of the Multnomah County Library in Portland. The Multnomah County District Attorney is one of the most powerful elected persons in the state. Several candidates are running for this office. All candidates have been invited to attend, speak to the audience, and answer questions. Again, that's the Multnomah County District Attorney Candidate Forum on Sunday, December 1st, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. at the Midland Branch of the Multnomah County Library, 805 Southeast 122nd Avenue. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month we'll show the documentary film The Cave on Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. The Cave is a story of female doctors saving lives in a secret underground hospital in Syria. The film follows the women as they contend with daily bombardments, chronic supply shortages, and the ever-present threat of chemical attacks. It paints a stirring portrait of courage, resilience, and female solidarity. Again, that's The Cave on Thursday, December 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, opening up after a once-in-a-generation storm, the blizzard that shut down highways in southern Oregon.
Trump staffers quit because of what they thought about the Ukrainian aid holdup.
And why some union members are upset about the Portland street response to people in crisis.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 27th, 2019. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Annette Newell. The rough winter weather continues tonight. A winter storm warning's in effect until 4 in the morning on Thanksgiving Day for areas including north central and central Oregon, the foothills of the southern Blue Mountains of Oregon. Travelers in these areas need to plan on slippery roads and as much as a foot of extra snow. If you have to travel there, experts say you need to keep an extra flashlight, food, and water in your vehicle in case of an emergency. Also, a winter weather advisory is in effect until 4 tomorrow morning for the upper Hood River Valley and the Northern Oregon Cascades, where forecasters expect as many as 6 more inches of snow. They expect hazardous driving conditions with blowing snow on the Cascade highways, and they're telling travelers to be sure they have extra warm clothes and an emergency kit in their vehicles in case they get stranded.
After a rare and major blizzard forced I-5 and several southern Oregon highways to close for hours, they have reopened to traffic. But this comes after hundreds of travelers were stranded overnight, some for as long as 18 hours, as fierce winds and barreling snow made traveling just about impossible. Some simply ran out of fuel. Forecasters describe a bomb cyclone of air pressure that unleashed the blizzard conditions in southern Oregon and northern California. The Department of Transportation closed Interstate 5 late Tuesday from Ashland to just north of Redding, California. Trucks backed up for miles. Though the roads are reopened, ODOT is requiring chains for all vehicles except 4x4s unless you're towing. Travelers should still expect slow going and backups.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wonders if the weather is trying to tell us something.
It's as if the suppressed anxieties of the world's peoples are being expressed in the weather. A bomb cyclone, weaponized weather in our over-weaponized nation and world, is dumping wind and snow from the Cascades to the Rockies, closing freeways, cutting power, ignoring that it's holiday season. As new fires rage in Southern California, not caring that fire season is over. No rules, no limits. What builds up must come out. There's not enough water in India and other countries, while oceans continue to rise. Water, like global wealth, distributed so unevenly. To predict the weather these days, you need to know science, history, politics, and human nature while putting all your faith in the computer's roll of a billion dice. I can't have faith in chaos or a partisan God. I can only look in the mirror, in the eyes of friends and people in the street, cast a little heart light anyone's way to strike some tinder beneath the coats and sweaters, letting their fires know they're far from alone. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
The powerful Pacific winter storm with high winds and heavy snow in the mountains knocked out power for thousands of people. At the height of the storm, about 19,000 Pacific Power customers lost power. The company says its crews worked through the night to cut that down to about 1,700 by today. David Lucas, Pacific Power's Vice President of Operations, says, quote, restoration continues and crews will continue working to restore power as quickly as possible. Pacific Power has arranged for additional assistance to come from other locations to respond to outages in the harder hit areas, and we expect to see good restoration progress, end quote. For those still without power, the company encourages people to check pacificpower.net/outage or text OUT, O-U-T, to 722-797.
In Bolivia, indigenous protesters continue to take to the streets to protest the coup government, which has cracked down on protests with violent force, killing at least 32. The legislature passed a bill that bans deposed President Evo Morales from running for election as he remains in exile in Mexico. It also removed the huayfala, the flag representing indigenous people of Bolivia, from the Capitol building. Protesters carried the flag through the capital city and called for the resignation of the coup's leader, Jeanine Añez. Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin is in Bolivia and spoke today with KBOO's Janka Soderberg.
If you could just give a brief synopsis of the current situation there in Bolivia. I know it's a story we've been covering here at KBOO quite a bit.
It's important for your listeners to understand that so far the coup has been successful in that these coup leaders have taken over the presidential palace, and not only that, they have turned around in just 2 weeks' time 13-plus years of work in terms of appointing conservative ministers to oversee every aspect of government, reshaping the relationship with the outside world to leave the orbit of the progressive Latin American countries and to move into the radical right, to unleash the power of the military and the police on the indigenous people and the most humble people in the country, and to get the approval and the support of the United States in all of this and the U.S.-backed Organization of American States and the MAS party, which is the movement towards socialism that is Evo Morales' party. gave in to pass a piece of legislation that was approved by the de facto president on Sunday, saying that they would work towards new elections, that Evo Morales would not be allowed to be a candidate, because anybody who'd completed two terms would not be allowed to be a candidate. But I wonder just how possible it is to move forward with free and fair elections with a government that is so racist and radical right.
I've been surprised even on some of the leftist commentators' shows who have critiqued Evo Morales and said, well, he had this going on and that going on. But at the same time, you've got this really extreme right group that's come in, and they are, I understand, the Christian, and talking about removing indigenous spirituality and taking indigenous rights in the name of Christianity. Is this accurate?
Absolutely. The de facto president, Janina Añez, came in with this wild, oversized Bible and said that the Bible is now in the presidential palace, and there were so many examples of defaming the indigenous flag, the Wipala. That's one of the reasons that people in the indigenous community came out into the streets in such great force and set up blockades all over the country demanding the resignation of the coup government. And then it's important to understand that Evo Morales not only increased the well-being of just about all of Bolivians in 13 years, but also gave a voice to the indigenous people, and this new government is taking revenge against that and wants to see indigenous people back on the farm, growing the food for the whiter European descendant folks, and not in the halls of power.
What can people do here in Oregon if they're interested in taking action on the situation in Bolivia?
There are letters in Congress that we at Code Pink are working on to distance the U.S. government from the coup and call for really free and fair elections. We're calling for the U.N. and not the OAS to be the ones that oversee these elections. We're organizing independent election monitoring groups. So if you go to codepink.org/Bolivian News, you can keep updated on what's going on there.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm sure that if people go to codepink.org, they'll be able to find all that info. Thank you, Medea Benjamin, for joining us on KBOO today from Bolivia. This is Jenka Soderberg reporting for KBOO.
Yesterday's domestic violence-related shooting outside a Vancouver elementary school ended in two deaths. Both the gunman, 38-year-old Keeland Hill, and one of the victims died from gunshot wounds. Another victim's injuries are not life-threatening. Keeland Hill, the suspected shooter, had a restraining order against him. It ordered him not to go to Sarah J. Anderson Elementary, where his victim worked. When the two victims were shot, they were in a car with three children, none of whom were physically hurt. Hill drove away from the scene and then fatally shot himself. He was out of jail waiting for a court hearing and had been released from jail last week. Clark County investigators have not yet released the name of the victim, who was the subject of the restraining order against him.
A list comes out each year about this time of some of the toys that could pose the worst health and safety risks for kids in the holiday season. Those that have choking hazards or could contain high levels of toxins are on this list. KBOO's Althea Billings has more on the Trouble in Toyland report from the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group Foundation.
Choking hazards, hidden toxins, and privacy concerns are among the dangers toy buyers should watch out for as the holiday shopping season begins, according to an annual report. The 34th Trouble in Toyland report from the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group Foundation says there's been success in making toys safer in the past few decades, but threats still linger on the shelves. Charlie Fisher, state director of OSPIRG Foundation, says parents can easily check whether a toy poses a choking hazard.
They can actually test small toys for choking hazards using a toilet paper tube. So basically just take the small part and drop it through the tube. If it goes through completely, it is likely a choking risk and should be kept away from children under the age of 3.
The report notes wooden vehicles sold by Target were recalled this year for being choking hazards, and deflated balloons also pose a risk to kids under 8. Researchers also found a number of toys contain high concentrations of toxic materials, including a slime product made with 75 times the level of boron acceptable under European Union standards. Fisher says recalled toys lurk on the internet, but parents can check the website saferproducts.gov to see which ones have been taken off the market. Another concern is strong magnets found in such items as construction sets, educational tiles, and sculpture kits, which contain rare earth metals. The report says two doctors at a children's hospital in Portland recently removed 54 magnets from 4 children in just over a month. A ban on these magnets was overturned in 2016. Fisher says the federal government could be doing more to protect kids from dangerous toys.
We're giving advice to parents here, but it's really our analysis that it's incumbent upon the federal regulators and manufacturers to further up in the supply stream prevent these from getting on the store shelves in the first place.
Cybersecurity is the newest threat from toys. The report advises parents and gift givers that those so-called smart toys that connect to the internet can often collect and store data, leaving them vulnerable to hackers. For KBOO Evening News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Althea Billings.
Public safety unions are threatening legal action over the city of Portland's plan to change the way it responds to 911 calls. Portland City Council approved a pilot street response plan last week. The idea, which had hundreds of signed supporters, is to start a new branch of first responders to help people who are having a mental health crisis or who are struggling with houselessness. Willamette Week reports that police and firefighters unions took the unusual step of trying to block the council vote and threaten legal action if the council does move forward. One lawyer says the pilot program would transfer some emergency service workers from the firefighters union to outside workers. The Portland Police Association also raised objections. Sergeant Daryl Turner, president of the Portland Police Association, writes, quote, "The street response project is built on a false premise and perception that Portland police officers are ill-suited to address mental health and homelessness issues in a constructive and safe manner. Nothing could be further from the truth."
A state tax credit could help Washington State's working families pay their bills. Democratic Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal joined Washington state groups at a roundtable discussion this week to support a tax credit measure for working families. Eric Tegedoff explains why supporters say it's needed and how it could work.
Ahead of the 2020 legislative session, a diverse coalition is calling on state lawmakers to fund a working-class tax break. The Working Families Tax Credit is the Evergreen State's version of the Federal Earned Income Tax Credit and would provide an average income boost of $350, mainly for people making less than $51,000 a year. Brittany Williams, an executive board member for the home care providers union SEIU 775, says most families would use the extra income to pay bills. In her case, that means medical expenses.
I need dental work done, and even though I do have dental insurance, because of the work that I need done, it just doesn't cover it. And so I work through the pain, and I live with that pain with my mouth issue every day, and I just don't complain about it to anybody. I make sure my children are taken care of.
The Working Families Tax Credit has already passed in Washington State, but has yet to be funded. It's estimated the measure would affect about 967,000 households. Supporters include Moms Rising, United Way of King County, and the Washington State Coalition Against Domestic Violence. At a roundtable this week in support of the tax credit, Seattle Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal says she also is working on federal legislation. Jayapal is co-sponsoring the Working Families Tax Relief Act and the Building Our Opportunities to Survive and Thrive Act, which would provide up to $3,000 in tax credits for individuals and $6,000 for married couples. She says the 2017 Republican tax credit isn't helping working families and contends that wealthy Americans can afford to pay more.
When three people in the United States of America, two of whom live in our state, have the same combined wealth as 160 million Americans across the country, we know that that does not provide the opportunity for everyone to have a fair and decent life and just to make ends meet.
The 60-day state legislative session begins on January 13th. State Senator Joe Wynn and Representative Deborah Intiman are the primary sponsors of the Working Families Tax Credit Bill. For Public News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
For the third year in a row, life expectancy for Americans has declined. A report in the Journal of the American Medical Association shows that after decades of living longer lives, Americans are dying earlier, cut down in the prime of life by drug overdoses, suicides, and diseases like cirrhosis, liver cancer, and obesity. The authors of the study suggest that America's lifespan reversal is a result of social and economic deprivation, a healthcare system with glaring gaps, and major psychological distress. Carol Graham, a scholar at the Brookings Institute, wrote, quote, "The root causes of the problem, which stem from the decline of the working class, the erosion of families, communities, and social capital, and an inadequate public healthcare system, these are not going away," end quote. Longevity continues to increase in every other affluent country in the world.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for news from the Boo. At 6, it's the Underground. Then at 7, listen to Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, partly cloudy, down to the freezing mark for a low of 32 overnight. And tomorrow's weather, Thanksgiving Day, looks very chilly too, a high of 44 under sunny skies, and the overnight low dropping to 28. Today in history, on this date in 1999, Helen Clark became the first elected female Prime Minister of New Zealand. And our quote of the day is from Prime Minister Helen Clark. She said, "Grounded in international human rights, gender equality doesn't just improve the lives of individual women, girls, and their families. It makes economic sense, strengthens democracy, and enables long-term sustainable progress."
Three women have accused Gordon Sondland of sexual misconduct. Sondland is a Portland hotel chain founder and owner and President Trump's ambassador to the European Union. He recently publicly testified in the impeachment inquiry into Trump. A new report published by ProPublica and Portland Monthly Magazine details the three women's interactions with Sondland years before he became a U.S. ambassador. The women say Sondland made sexual advances on them, which they rejected. Following each incident, the women say Sondland retaliated against them professionally. Sondland denies the claims.
President Trump now denies that he directed his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, to go to Ukraine and seek out investigations on his behalf. Now, this contradicts his own words to the Ukrainian president in the White House release transcript of a July 25th call. Trump also contradicted sworn testimony from his own staff. Before a rally in Florida, Trump was asked if he directed Giuliani to take actions for him in Ukraine. And the president responded, quote, "No, I didn't direct him, but he's a warrior. Rudy's a warrior. Rudy went, he possibly saw something, but you have to understand Rudy has other people that he represents." At the same time, newly released testimony shows at least two budget staffers quit their jobs, at least in part because of the Ukrainian military aid hold. Mark Sandy from the White House Office of Management and Budget told impeachment investigators that two budget staffers left the agency after expressing frustrations about the unexplained hold on Ukrainian aid, according to new closed-door transcripts released just this week.
On this Thanksgiving Eve, candidates for president talk about bringing the country together from divisive politics. The first DNC-approved poll since last week's debate doesn't change the December debate lineup, but it does bring former VP Joe Biden back into the lead. Plus, Republican primary candidate Joe Walsh apologizes for past behavior and any role he played in helping elect Trump. We have it all in today's edition of 2020 Talks.
And this may sound kind of crazy because most people, when they think of Joe Walsh, they think of, you know, the divisive Tea Party guy that was out there screaming and getting in fights with everybody for 8 years.
Republican primary candidate Joe Walsh has apologized for his past behavior and any role he played in helping elect President Donald Trump, accusing the incumbent of spreading hate. In contrast, he says he can disagree with people without saying they hate America.
I want to bring the country together. I want to bring Republicans and Democrats together.
That sentiment is shared amongst all of the president's challengers, though they may have different ideas about how much change is necessary to do that, given that some people have been left out for hundreds of years. South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, a Bible-quoting Episcopalian, voiced concerns shared by a lot of families ahead of tomorrow's holiday, while a fire truck sped by.
I think a lot of us are looking at Thanksgiving with a mixture of anticipation and a little bit of nervousness about how to keep the peace.
Two of Buttigieg's in-laws identify as evangelical Christians, and one is a pastor. A new crop of activist organizations aiming to promote respectful dialogue and help people come together has bloomed since Trump's election. Better Angels, Bridge the Divide, Living Room Conversations, the National Conversation Project, and many others. Here's how New Jersey Senator Cory Booker describes it.
I think we need a revival of civic grace, a more courageous empathy.
Booker had an impressive debate performance last week, but he's still at 2% in the first DNC-approved Quinnipiac poll since the debate.
I have not yet qualified for the December stage and need your help to do that. If you believe in my voice and that I should be up here, please go to CoryBooker.com. Please help.
After making that plea, he raised more than $1 million last week. But released yesterday, the poll hasn't changed December's lineup. Former Vice President Joe Biden took back the lead, and for the first time in a national poll, Buttigieg surpassed Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. In his very first week campaigning, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg got 3%, on par with Senators Kamala Harris of California and Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. To get on stage, entrepreneur Andrew Yang and Hawaii Representative Tulsi Gabbard each need one more qualifying poll. Businessman Tom Steyer and Gabbard both need a handful of additional donors.
There are a lot of folks that watch those debates, and they're important, and it's valuable to be on that stage and to get that time on the television. But the next day and the next day and the next day are more opportunities to meet more voters and introduce yourself and to make those connections.
Des Moines School Board member Rob Barron has endorsed former Housing Secretary Julian Castro for president. Barron says, with a couple of months to go, most Iowans don't make their decisions until a month out. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Wolke.
Just a week after the Trump administration rolled back safety rules meant to protect workers and people who live near chemical plants, an explosion at a TPC Group chemical plant in Texas sent a fireball into the sky. After the first blast at 1 this morning, KBMT in Beaumont reported that, quote, throughout the morning, more booms could be heard in the area as firefighters attempted to control the blaze. 12 hours later, another fiery blast shook the area. Police reported extensive damage throughout the city, including homes with shattered glass and blown-off doors. Three workers at the plant suffered injuries. Catherine Frazier of Environment Texas says, quote, this facility has a track record of violating the Clean Air Act, with five other illegal emissions events just in 2019, emitting carcinogenic chemicals and a history of community complaints.
A Huffington Post survey found only 29% of Americans attending a Thanksgiving dinner expected to discuss politics. Need talking points for Thanksgiving? The Sierra Club has you covered, as Roz Brown reports.
It's that time of year when the abundance of news stories can either prompt or discourage difficult discussions over the holiday dinner table. But if you're willing to take the plunge on some tough but important environmental topics, the Sierra Club says it has your back. Heather Moyer, a writer and editor for the Environmental Advocacy Group, has created a holiday dinner table conversation guide to help steer the conversation in some different directions, although she admits they're not light topics.
A lot of us come from families that have very different political viewpoints, and we all have those hard conversations, and so we just decided to make one mostly about environmental issues, talking about clean energy or coal or environmental justice, those sorts of things.
The Sierra Club has posted a similar guide 6 times. This year, it includes fresh positions regarding the Green New Deal, forced climate migration, and the U.S.-Mexico border wall as possible conversation options. A 2017 Huffington Post survey showed that just 29% of Americans attending a Thanksgiving dinner expected politics to be discussed. The Sierra Club has taken a public stance on multiple environmental issues. Moyer says the conversation guide explains the issues and why it's important to talk about them.
I think people find it useful to realize that we all are dealing with, you know, family and friends who have different viewpoints, and people like having those sorts of things to look back at. I think anytime you get help explaining something that might be kind of considered a really large and overwhelming issue, people appreciate that sort of thing.
And when a conversation deteriorates, family therapists say it's important to hear someone out. But that can be tough, with research showing that only 10% of people listen effectively. Instead, it's more likely that a person's mind is busy with other thoughts or already formulating a reply. For Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
This evening, a Portland holiday tradition turns the big 6-0. For the 60th straight year, Portland's iconic white stag will become Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for the holidays, That transformation happens tonight. The tradition started in 1959 when Harold Hirsch of White Stag Sportswear surprised his wife with a gift she'd asked for 2 years earlier, a red nose for the company's iconic white stag. The sign has changed since then, but the red nose has stuck around, and it continues to glow every year for the holidays, starting the night before Thanksgiving.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 27th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Jenka Soderberg, and Eric Tegedoff. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Althea Billings. The director of Evening News is also Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Annette Newell. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's a special broadcast from Alternative Radio's archives, where renowned activist for Indian rights Russell Means presents a moving and eloquent talk on Native America and discusses his work on For the World to Live, Columbus Must Die. At 9 on Native America Calling, host Terry Gatewood talks with Acoma Puebla Governor Brian Bayo about the tribe's recent victory in regaining possession of the Acoma Shield from an overseas auction house. At 10, KBOO's Tammy interviews Robert Franklin, the manager for the Native American Student and Community Center located in PSU. Robert discusses his life on and off the reservation and how his personal experience has shaped his current position with the NACC. And at 11, on It's Between the Covers, where host David Naiman speaks with poet Jake Skeets on his debuted collection of poetry.